This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to our final hour of Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio. We are not on CBS Sports Network today. Instead, there was Champions League, UEFA Champions League soccer on. Bayern Munich and Chelsea smooth through in their leg ones of the knockout rounds of the championship. But as always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Tiki Barber here taking you through the last hour as BT had to take off and head towards Queens, where he's calling the St. John's game tonight. He does that here and there, and it's all good because I'll take you home the rest of the way. We have some good topics, though, too, to follow for you, including Ben Roethlisberger, who we asked Peter King about in our last segment or 2 segments ago, and how he's being treated there. He's put in a lot of good time with the Steelers. 2 championships. He's been to 3 Super Bowls, and it looks like they're trying to quietly shove him out the door. That's a question. It's not a statement, but we'll dissect a little bit. Also, Matt Doherty, who was the former North Carolina Tar Heels head coach. He was on those famous North Carolina Jordan teams with Worthy and Brad Doherty as well. Won the championship back in 81-82 season. He'll join us in our very next segment at 5:20. That's 2:20 Pacific time. That should be a good interview, especially as we try to dissect what's going on in the ACC. The Blue Bloods are struggling, even though Duke seems to be saving its season after 3 straight victories, including, unfortunately, a victory over my Virginia Cavaliers, who are now, I think, 13 or 14, maybe even 15 in the polls. But they're solidly in the tournament, but they haven't been playing well as of late. All right, Ben Roethlisberger. We know his career. We know the ups and downs that he had early in his career, and then the consistency and the success that he displayed throughout the last 12 years or so. Save the 1 year where he had an injury back in 2019. He only played in 2 games, 2 starts, and then he ultimately missed the rest of that season. But Big Ben has been the man for the Steelers, and he's been paid handsomely for it. In fact, a few years ago when the Steelers were up against it, against the cap, they gave Ben an extension which lowered his cap number significantly. So instead of having, these ridiculous 16% of the cap salaries, Big Ben's was about $23 million or so, $24 million. And instead, it went down to, manageable, so they could service the rest of the team, and they put together some good squads. The problem is that by doing that, they ballooned his next year's salary. So the 2021 season, his salary, for cap reasons, is $41 million. And with the shrinking of the cap, that is just impossible to service for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Big Ben is kind of sitting as a liability to the Steelers, and they're trying to figure out what to do next. Here's why I think it's a little bit disrespectful. And then I'm going to get to Ike Taylor's response of what Big Ben should do. Big Ben has been the man in Pittsburgh. We know this. He's drafted back in 2004 along with Eli and Phillip Rivers. And the last thing that you want to do for a guy who's been so iconic for your team is to make him feel like he's an outcast, like he's someone that you don't respect. And that's what they're doing right now. Big Ben said right after the season, I want to come back and play. I want to play for one more season at least. And instead, what we're getting is Big Ben being treated by the organization as, we'll wait and see. Let's just wait and see what we're going to do with you, Ben. And it's kind of disrespectful for a guy who's given a lot and won some championships for you. I get where the Steelers are coming from. They need to wait and they want to see, but it's giving the impression that they don't want Big Ben, and that's disrespectful. We'll dig into it a little bit more, but let's first listen to what Ike Taylor had to say about Big Ben himself and what he could do for the organization.
I think Seven should shut it down. And the reason why I think Seven should shut it down, he's done everything he possibly can. I think Seven has done whatever you're asking for a quarterback to do, as many as opportunities to win Super Bowls, I think Seven did everything he could. So I think if Seven wants to come back, you're setting him back a year or two or three. I think, and the reason why I think you're setting him back is because you've seen the progression in Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow before he got hurt, and Baker Mayfield. So we're talking about three young quarterbacks in one division. Who are you going to pick last?
I mean, he has a decent point. I mean, I laugh at that, but because it is it's a very valid point. If you were picking the quarterbacks in the AFC North right now, where would Big Ben fall? I think out of respect, you probably are going to put him second, maybe, only because Lamar has an MVP. But on a given day, do you believe that Lamar could win a game easier than Big Ben could, especially given his track record, given his, I don't know, arm strength, his command of an offense, his ability to understand and see a defense? I don't know if I would do that. I think Ike is talking fantasy type football, fantasy type statistics, and I respect the hell out of Ike. I think he has a great way about himself, but there's an intangible that I think you're missing a little bit when you, I don't know, shrink Big Ben down to a ranking and what he means to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because, again, we don't know if Joe Burrow is certainly at the bottom of this list, mainly because he's injured. And we don't know how healthy he's going to be coming into next season. But so Joe Burrow is definitely four out of the quarterbacks in the AFC North. I probably am going to put Baker Mayfield still at three, and this is the one where you'd bait with Big Ben. Obviously, Lamar's one, again, because I said this, because he won the MVP, and he's such a difference maker on the field. But I would put Baker at three because he's been good at times. He's been bad at times, a little bit inconsistent. He hasn't yet won a big game. Now, we know that he's got a good team around him, but I think that's outside of this conversation. We're talking about, you know, the player, the individual himself, the player himself. So I'd probably put Baker at three. And then the toss-up is between, or the debate really is between Lamar Jackson and Big Ben for who's the best quarterback in the division. And, you know, maybe because I'm an old head and I think of the historical significance of Ben Roethlisberger's stint in Pittsburgh, I tend to say that Big Ben would have the edge, even despite the fact that Lamar Jackson has the MVP. Now, if Lamar Jackson game grows, then I believe that Lamar easily in the short term. I'm not talking about long term, because in the long term, it's clearly Lamar Jackson. But we're talking in the short term. We're talking the 2021 season. And I think that's all that really matters, because that's what the Steelers have to figure out, is what are they going to do for the 2021 season with Ben Roethlisberger? In the 2021 season, do you trust Big Ben having one more year post that elbow surgery, you know, maybe getting some more time in the offseason to work with some of these young wide receivers on the squad? So let's not forget, he had no time this past season because of one, his injury, and his recovery from his surgery. But also, I mean, there's some young players on this team. I mean, Chase Claypool is a rookie. Deontay Johnson, he's young. He's only 24 years old as well. James Washington, he's 24. Like all these guys he's throwing the football to, they're all young players. And he really had no time in the offseason to work with them. Give him one more year. How much more advanced is that offense going to be? And do you trust Big Ben to grow them? My answer is yes. Like if you have a regular offseason where you're starting OTAs and right after the draft, and then you have mini camps and a couple more organized team activities, and then you get into training camp, I think Big Ben with this slew of weapons becomes very, very, very interesting for the 2021 season. And you know, unless Lamar Jackson takes leaps and bounds as a pass thrower, I mean, you can argue that Big Ben still is number one in the division. So I hear what Ike is saying. You know, from a fantasy football type standpoint, you probably are not going to go Big Ben because all those other guys are young and they're exciting and they can throw up numbers and they have all this diversity in their offense. They're going to get – I mean, Lamar's going to have double-digit touchdowns rushing probably as he frequently does. Baker Mayfield is athletic. He can do that as well. But from a managing your team and pushing your team forward towards a championship, it's Big Ben. Like Ike is right in a sense, but he's wrong when you actually think about it. Big Ben is still the best quarterback in the AFC North. And, you know, despite his age, his coming off an injury, he has a desire to want to get this done. And the Steelers, and this is really my original point, and I'll get back to it, the Steelers have to find a way to manage this the right way. They can't just leave him on pause because he's already stated, I want to be back. Big Ben said, I want to come back and play one more season. And I am more than willing to figure out the money. Like, I'll make the money work. This isn't about that. I don't need to be the highest paid quarterback in the league or even in the vicinity of being one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. He just wants to play. And I feel like he has something he wants to prove after how last season ended for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so there's that urgency, which is a chip on his shoulder, which all vets usually use so well, especially quarterbacks. But there's also this renewed energy to go out how he wants to go out. And right now it feels like the Steelers are trying to find a way to, I don't know, move him away quietly, which is disrespectful to his career. It really is disrespectful to all that he has done for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know it's the NFL, it's a what have you done for me lately league, but if I'm Pittsburgh, I'm finding a way to extend his deal, not because he wants to play, but you extend the deal so you spread out that cap hit over 3 or 4 years as opposed to having it all lump in 1 year at 41 and change, 41 plus million. You extend it out, then after next year, if things don't end the way that you want and he says, I'm done, he walks away and everybody feels happy. I know that they have other ideas at the quarterback position. Dwayne Haskins is now on this roster and they're intrigued to see what he is all about. But as much as I like Dwayne Haskins as an individual, I am not sold at all on his skill to be an NFL quarterback. He's a good young man. He had some great success in his one season starting at Ohio State, but we saw him struggle in his first 2 years, really, with the Washington football team to the point where he was, cut before the season was over. I mean, that's just unprecedented for a guy who's drafted in the top 15. And so he's there, but I don't know if you trust him being your guy, especially next year. And I think that's the biggest thing when I look at this Steelers team. They're not a team that's in rebuild mode. I keep reading that in certain places. Like, let's tear it down. Tear down this Steelers team and start over. I just rolled through all these young wide receivers that are on this squad. The defense is just as impressive with Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's a young player, playing strong safety. TJ Watt, who was an MVP defensive MVP candidate. He's been so for a couple of years now. Avery Williamson at inside line. I mean, there's really good players. Cam Hayward, I mean, he's not even that old. He's only 31 years old. There's good players on this squad who they have to be, cognizant of their, what they bring in order to advance the Steelers squad. There's ways that they can manipulate the salary cap, and there's not a ton of urgency, but the silence from the Steelers, basically, well, we'll wait and see. We're still up in the air with Big Ben. That's a little bit troubling, if you ask me. I think Big Ben deserves more and better than that from this Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm sure it'll all get worked out, but in the short term, I think it's a little bit disrespectful to, the greatest, well, maybe second greatest, because all championships that Terry Bradshaw won, but one of the great quarterbacks in the history of your organization. All right, the NCAA tournament is just weeks away, and former Tar Heels head coach Matt Doherty joins us next. What's wrong with all the blue bloods? I'm sure he'll have an answer. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Welcome back to Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Network is not with us today as they're covering English Premier League, or UEFA, not Premier League, it's UEFA Champions League soccer. Instead, we're going to talk some college basketball. Tis the season. We're only 2.5 or so weeks away from Selection Sunday. To help us talk about college basketball, but also his journey in college basketball, both as a player and now as an author, as a coach, and now as an author, is Matt Doherty, who is a former North Carolina Tar Heels head coach. He joins us here on Tiki and Tierney. Matt, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, man, Tiki, it's great to be on the show with you, ACC brethren.
That's right.
And New York Giants star. I grew up a Giant fan on Long Island, and my dad took me games at Yankee Stadium and then the Meadowlands. So yeah, it's really cool to be on with you. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. Matt, how did you end up in North Carolina from up this way? I mean, it's universal now. You go anywhere, you can be in California and you end up in Alabama or something. But back then, how did you end up all the way down in North Carolina?
Yeah, Coach Smith had recruited in New York a lot. It started with Frank McGuire in the 50s. Frank McGuire coached the 57 national championship team at North Carolina, and the starting five was from New York City. So ever since then, Coach Smith continued to recruit him because Coach Smith was an assistant, ended up being an assistant for Frank McGuire, and just kept it going. We had Jimmy Black was our point guard. He was from the Bronx. Michael Korn was from Jersey City. Mitch Kupchak, who's the GM of the Hornets, was from Long Island. Kenny Smith was from New York City. Chris Bruss was a teammate of mine from Long Island. He tapped into New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania very hard.
Yeah, no, I mean, you find out there's some pretty good basketball players up this way. At least there used to be. I don't know if it's still as fertile of a ground as it was back then. I mean, we're talking to Matt Doherty, who is a former head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. And you just wrote a new book. Before we start digging into what's happening to the ACC now, Duke and North Carolina, even Virginia's lost a couple games. Virginia Tech is soaring up the rankings right now. But I want to hit this book real quick, because I think I kind of knew a little bit of the story, but not as much as I think I should know, or at least you want people to know. So in your book, you detail your stint, obviously, as a player there and national championship, a team that you were on with Worthy and Jordan, those guys. But also it delves into your journey as a head coach and how that all came about. And then most importantly, Matt, how it ended. What went so wrong for you at North Carolina? Because from the sounds of it, it was like you were shunned down there.
Yeah, it was very painful. And the book is called Rebound, From Pain to Passion, and it's about leadership lessons learned. It'll be released March 3rd. People are pre-ordering it on Amazon. We've already had to do a second print, so it's gone very well. We're excited. And the reason I wrote it, I got into the leadership space a year and a half ago. I started doing corporate talks, executive coaching. I'm now a Vistage chair, which is the oldest and largest executive coaching organization in the world. And when I did some corporate talks, people say, hey, do you have a book? And I'm like, no, I don't have a book. You know, I don't have a book. And they're like,
you need some collateral to give out.
Yeah, exactly. And it gives you credibility whether they read the book or not, right?
That's true. That's very true.
So I've always had the makings of a book since I got run out of town in 2003. I was the head coach at Notre Dame for 1 year. That was my first coaching job. Mm-hmm. I was an assistant for Roy Williams at Kansas for 7 years, got the Notre Dame job. And then Bill Guthridge, you know, retired in June and had been there 3 years, and Roy Williams turned it down, and Coach Williams came calling for me. And then he had Michael Jordan call me. Coach Smith was a good recruiter now. And I ended up taking the job. I felt like I had to have some, you know, clarification. You know, would it be my program? Can I bring my assistants? And set expectations that my first year we'd be good, my second year we wouldn't, my third year we'd be rebuilding. And I got responses that made me feel I could take the job. And I got the job in July, and those that know college basketball, July is the recruiting period. It's not an ideal time to take a job.
Yeah.
Most coaches
You're
get
way
jobs
behind.
And, yeah. But we also, in leadership, and you see this with, you know, presidents, you know, they take over, they talk about the first 100 days on a job, because your reputation is going to be formed in those first 90 to 100 days. And when I took over, I brought my staff with me. People didn't like that. Even though I checked it with the AD, people didn't like the quick, abrupt change in staff culture. I was a little younger, more aggressive. I felt like we needed more intensity in the program, and we won. You know, we won. We were ranked number one in the country. We won 18 games in a row, tied for the ACC regular season title. And then the next year we lost, and then there were rumblings, and, you know, Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge had offices in the building. And so in corporate America, you know, that doesn't happen, right?
No.
You know, so I didn't manage that well. And so after I got let go, Tiki, you know, and you value education, you got academic scholarship to Virginia. What do you do after you lose a football game? What does the coach do? What do you do as a player?
Yeah, you go
film.
You go watch the film, figure out how you can do it better and not let the mistakes happen again.
Exactly. So that's what I did. I went on a leadership journey. I went to Wharton. I went to Darden School in Charlottesville. I worked with an executive coach there named Carol Weber and Jack. They taught at the Darden School. And as I'm taking these classes, I'm like, oh, my gosh. If I would have taken these classes before I was a head coach, I might still be the head coach because they're teaching you things like emotional intelligence, which I had no idea what emotional intelligence was until in 2003. And the thing that in sports especially, but in academia, leadership is the most important topic that's not formally taught.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like you got to learn it by fire, right? You got to learn it by doing or being mentored or being on the right staff with someone who's a great leader or coach, et cetera, or having played under a great mentor or coach like that. Like you almost have to learn it real time as opposed to being taught it. Nowadays, they're teaching it, correct?
Right. They're teaching it more. And that's why I got into this business of executive coaching, because leadership is a learned behavior. You know, when we grew up or I grew up, people say, oh, he's a born leader. And then you think, well, you know, you're either born leader or you're not. But then, you know, when I got run out of town and they questioned my leadership in a public manner, and I went on this leadership journey, and I remember sitting in a class talking about emotional intelligence. And in this book, Primal Leadership, The Art of Emotional Intelligence, the author said leadership is a learned behavior.
Yeah.
And that gave me hope that I could get better.
Yeah.
And so I want my team now – our CEOs, you know, I don't have a basketball team to coach, but I'm coaching CEOs and helping them get better and, you know, improve their weaknesses and watch them grow and develop. And it's just as fulfilling as, you know, watching a guy improve his jump shot.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. The book is Rebounds by Matt Doherty, who joins us here on Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio. Matt, let's jump over to the conference right now, our conference, which is, it was in trouble early. Duke is playing a little bit better of late. North Carolina is as well. They had a big win over Louisville. You know, we can blame the pandemic a lot, the lack of practicing, a lack of these shutdowns that have happened. But, you know, when we see really great coaches like Coach K struggle early in this season, does that start to make you scratch your head that the business of the game, business of winning in college, and especially the ACC, has changed significantly over the years?
Yeah, well, it's always been a function of talent. I think that's one thing that people tend to forget, mm-hmm. right? You know, Coach K is a great coach, but he's also had great players, you know, and you know, how good a coach would he be if he was coaching at Boston College,
mm-hmm.
you know? Same thing with Roy Williams. Coach Smith used to say, I can draw up a play to get the ball to the block, and then recruiting takes over.
That's a good one, right? Are you physically better than the guy that's guarding you? The answer is yes.
Right.
We score a bucket.
Yeah.
If no, then you know what? Maybe you get a turnover.
Yeah, when they run, you know, power sweep and they pitch it to number 21, you know, on the Giants, and you know, you turn it into a touchdown. Maybe the backup doesn't do that, or you get hurt, and all of a sudden the team's not as good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does take talent.
Yeah.
And now you combine talent with great coaching. That's when you have dynasties like they have at Duke, like Coach Williams had at Kansas and North Carolina, Dean Smith, you know, Terry Holland at Virginia. You know, I mean, he was a better coach with Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it takes talent. But, you know, the bottom line is Duke doesn't have great talent.
Yeah. And they're young.
And
it's consistently becoming younger, right?
Yeah, they've been relying on the one-and-dones. And then every one-and-done class, every number one prospect, just like in the NFL draft, just like in the NBA draft, you know, the number one pick is Zion Williamson. Well, the next year, the number one pick is not as good as Zion Williamson. Just because you're the number one pick doesn't mean you are equal to the previous number one pick.
Yeah.
So the number one pick in high school basketball, the number one recruiting class in high school basketball, doesn't mean they're as good as Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, and RJ Barrett.
Yeah, no, you're right, and that's where the disconnect happens. I think people think that it's congruent year over year, and it's really not. We're talking to Matt Doherty, former North Carolina Tar Heels head coach, also the author of a new book called Rebound, and you should check it out. In leadership, not just as an athlete and as a coach, but also as a CEO and really as an individual. Matt, there was a situation that happened at Duke, interestingly, where Jalen Johnson just basically said, "I'm out. I'm done." Now, you haven't coached. It's been over a decade now, right? Almost a decade and a half.
Well,
it's the last time you coached.
Yeah.
Just a decade. How would you handle that type of situation? Because Coach K, I think he has to stand behind him and say, "Yeah, good for the kid. You know, good job." But I mean, he's essentially quitting on his team. How should that be handled?
Man, publicly, you've got to say the right thing. I probably wouldn't have gone as overboard as Coach K would have. I would have just said, you know, we're disappointed that he and his parents have made this decision, and we wish him luck, and then move on. You know, he'll always be welcome back here. He's always a part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've got a team to coach.
Yeah.
And you're either, you know, on the train or you're not. And so it's kind of ironic, I think, that maybe it's not ironic, they've played better since he has left the team, because there had to be, listen, body language is 50% of communication, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's one of those things that I've learned, you know, after I got out of coaching at North Carolina. And his body language had to be telling to the people around him for, you know, a week before, 2 weeks before. I mean, that wasn't a decision he made, you know, one day.
Yeah.
So you feel it. And energy is contagious. The most important thing a player, and I'd love your opinion, the most important thing a player can bring to the field, the court, the locker room is energy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. John Gruden used to say this to my brother. He's like, we need genuine enthusiasm. If you don't got it, fake it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it.
And that's like Donnie Walsh, who's a longtime NBA GM. He and I've talked about that. That was he said to me. And you look at Jack Welch, who's the famous CEO who passed away from GE.
Yep.
He talks about the four E's, and the first one is energy.
Yeah.
Do you bring energy to the workplace?
Yeah. No, you have to do it. Matt, I wish we had more time to chat because it's a fun conversation, but I definitely encourage all of our listeners out there, and I'm going to do this myself, pick up your new book. It's called Rebound, and it sounds really, really interesting, and I appreciate your insights. Because leadership is really the most important thing that you can display as a coach, as a husband, you know, CEO, whatever it may be. We appreciate you, Matt. Good luck to you.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on, Tiki. Thank you.
My pleasure as well. Matt Doherty, former North Carolina Tar Heels head coach and author of a new book called Rebound. Sounds interesting. He's an interesting dude, too. I want to check that out. We got the Blast coming up next. The T-Wolves have a new coach, but could they be open to moving on from one of their star players? We'll get to the Blast, but first, here's an update from Rich Ackerman. Rich, take it away. Welcome back. Last segment here of Tiki and Tierney on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Tiki Barber, CBS Sports Radio. Good conversation with Matt Doherty, former North Carolina Tar Heels head coach, and his new book, Rebound. I went a little bit long, but that's all good. Because it's just me doing the Blast this next segment. Some interesting topics in our 5 minute, which now goes like 10 minutes. But we say 5 minutes because we want you to think it's 5 minutes. It's actually 10 minutes. And D-Cell's going to help me do it, aren't you, D-Cell?
If you make me, I will.
You know you love reading the Blast. Let's hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki, let's start with some NFL. Yesterday, Seattle Seahawks linebacker KJ Wright joined our buddy Jim Rome right here on CBS Sports Radio and reiterated his desire to sign with the Seahawks. But KJ did not seem interested in giving Seattle a hometown discount.
I do way too much on the football field to take a discount. That makes absolutely no sense. Like, if you want to, you know, win all these championships and, you know, look good on Sundays, you got to compensate your guys that are making plays. And like you said earlier, nobody, you know, had double-digit TFLs and PBUs in the NFL. So I have a family and I'm trying to, you know, set up long-term success for my family, so that's kind of out of the question.
All right, Teek, so my question is this. When do hometown discounts make the most sense for players and organizations?
I think for an organization to even intimate this, your guy has had to have been there for, at least a decade and has made a ton of money, like $80 to $100 million. KJ Wright has done very well in his career with in the NFL. I mean, he's made all with the Seahawks, by the way. He's made over $45 million. But, you know, given where money goes these days, that doesn't set you up for generations. I mean, if you manage it correctly, maybe it does, especially when he's thinking relative to some other players on his team, like Russell Wilson, who's trying to, you know, manage players and personnel. He doesn't feel comfortable, even though in all honesty, he is comfortable. But I think it's got to be a guy who's been there for a long time. So he falls into that category, but also has done so well that he doesn't have to think about money anymore going forward. And it's also a situation where Seattle is, I mean, are they in a position to compete for a championship? Like, my gut keeps wanting to say yes. But every year they get to a point and then they fall a little bit short. And so I think that also has to be a criteria. Like, if I'm doing this and we're going to win a championship, or we're going to bring in a player that's going to help us win a championship, then maybe I'd do that. But that's hard to ascertain, especially this early in the offseason.
Lions special assistant Chris Spielman told the Detroit News this week, quote, "I'm sure in free agency, in any philosophy, you can fill voids in free agency, but you can't buy a locker room," end quote. Do NFL executives need to change their philosophies given the new trend of player movement in the NFL?
Wow, this is a really, really interesting question. And what he's talking about, Chris Spielman, and he knows this because he was formerly in locker rooms, is you can pay a guy in free agency to come fill a void. You need a leader. John Gruden is always looking for this with the Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders now. I need that guy who was our X factor, who was our dog, our alpha on the defensive side of the ball. And it's easier to develop that player, or at least draft that player and hope he develops into that guy, than it is to pay him, in Chris Spielman's word, buy that guy via free agency, inject him into your locker room, and hope that it works. Because he may have been that player to an extent wherever he was before, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to mesh with the new personalities in a new locker room. So the answer to the question, do executives need to change their philosophy? No, I don't think they should. As much as we want to bring this down to, you know, the X's and O's, like, is this guy successful? How much does it cost? And, you know, can he transfer what he used to do to my new place? It's all about people. It's all about the relationship. And the best coaches and evaluators not only want the best players, but they want the best players that are going to fit with the locker room and the philosophy that their head coach has with that locker room. I mean, it's so nuanced that it's almost really hard to have a one way or no way, philosophy of doing it.
All right, Teek, let's move on to some video games here. I know you love those. Notre Dame will not participate in giving their name, logos, or any other branding property for the second coming of EA Sports' college football video game until new name, image, and likeness rules are clearly outlined and finalized to determine whether players will get a cut of the profit of the game. What are our thoughts on Notre Dame's decision?
I love this. It almost sounds like, or feels like, and I don't know their true intentions here, but it almost feels like Notre Dame is standing up for their players. Now, the Golden Domers, they have an unbelievable following, and there's significant impact of their brand, meaning just Notre Dame's brand, and, you know, touchdown Jesus and all the things that go, the Irish, etc., with their brand. But their players, if you go there and you become a star, even if you're not like a superstar on the next level, you go there and become a star, you become co-branded with that organization. Just think of the guys over the years. And so I think what Notre Dame is doing is it actually makes you feel good about an organization, a university, taking care of their kids, at least trying to take care of their kids, and give them a piece of the pie should name, image, and likeness get ratified by the NCAA. The challenge, and this is where I think this actually might be the reason that they're doing this, is that name, image, and likeness is now a congressional issue. There's legislation that's been introduced already, and if the government starts regulating this in any way, then it gets really murky and messy for colleges. So Notre Dame might just be saying, we're going to stay out of this until the waters get clear, because right now the muck on the bottom is starting to float to the surface.
All right, Teek, let's get to some NBA. Since drafting Karl Anthony Towns number one overall back in 2015, the Minnesota Timberwolves are 169-254. Mm-hmm. Ouch.
That's ugly.
With just one playoff appearance and one lone playoff game win.
God, how is that possible?
That's rough.
It is.
However, earlier this week, Kat reaffirmed to The Athletic that he does want to stay in Minnesota. Does not want to leave. Does Karl Anthony Towns need to leave Minnesota to find success in the NBA?
I mean... I want to say no, but I think I have to say I want to say yeah, stick with it. You know, be that guy. You know, it fights through the adversity. But it's not been a little bit now for Karl Anthony Towns. This is his fifth season. Sixth season, because he came out when he was 20. His sixth season in the NBA, and they just are not a winning franchise and haven't been. And even when they start to get a little bit close, things get derailed. So if I was Karl Anthony Towns and winning a championship becomes important to me, and because that's an important part here, winning a championship. I think it was 1 year that they won. They won 47 games. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. 2017, 2018. They won 47 games, but then lost in the first round. This is when Thibodeau was their coach. So if winning is important to me, and it's probably not yet because he's only 25 years old, I'd say give it another 3 or 4 years. If it's much of the same, then he's definitely got to bounce and head someplace else in order to find success.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through their career, their history, the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And, I mean, they're just not – the last time it was when Flip Saunders was the head coach was the last time they were consistently in the postseason. But even then, I mean, they went to the conference finals in 2003 and 4. But this is back in, you know, this is 18 years ago. Even then, they were consistently first round knockout. I mean, there was seven straight first round knockouts until they finally get to the conference finals. And then they go well over a decade before they get to the postseason again. And then they get knocked out in the first round. I mean, I don't think the team is cursed. I just think they haven't done a good job with deep talent acquisition, because Kevin Garnett was on those teams. Kevin Love was on a couple of those teams. Now, Karl Anthony Towns, who was Rookie of the Year, he's on this team. They just haven't done well in free agency, and they certainly haven't done well in the draft, even though you could argue that because they had two Rookies of the Year in back-to-back seasons. I don't know. Something's wrong with Minnesota, and it's got to be frustrating. Karl Anthony Towns has bigger issues, obviously with the coronavirus that we've been well documented, and so it's not top of mind right now. But you got to believe eventually it will become top of mind for Karl Anthony Towns when he starts looking at his career and saying, "God, I really haven't accomplished much as a team. Individually, I've done great. As a team, we haven't done much." Anyways, great show today. Appreciate you guys hanging on. We will be back on CBS Sports Network, the TV side, tomorrow. Appreciate you guys hanging out. D-Cell, Samter, see you all tomorrow. Take care. Be well. Be safe.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.